From WNIN and PRX, this is ¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
Telling the stories of Latinos from the homeland to the heartland. Hola, soy Paola Marizan. Y en este episodio, we're going to hear about a community that came together to prevent the construction of an ICE detention center. This ICE detention center was close to home for many Latinos in El Medio Oeste. Bárbara Anguiano brings us a story from Elkhart, Indiana.
Elkhart County is about as Midwestern a county as it's possible to be. Está como 80 millas al este de Chicago, and its primary industry is RVs. Yes, as in recreational vehicles, but there's something else that makes Elkhart the new quintessential Midwestern town.
That's una libra de jamón polaco.
El número de Latinos that now call Elkhart County home. According to the last census, Elkhart has a population of a little more than 200,000 people. 15% of those 200,000 are Latino, so that means nearly 30,000 Latinos live in the county alone. The city of Goshen is listed by U.S. Immigration and Customs as having one of the highest concentrations of Dreamers in the state. That's not to mention the surrounding counties that have about the same sort of industry makeup. The Latino influence can be felt in Elkhart County, too. There's signs for Latino businesses, flags from Latino countries here and there, but the change is not just on a visual level. The number of Latinos that now call Elkhart County home has forced the area to reevaluate the role Latinos play in the community. And the prime example of this is a reckoning with the private prison company Core Civic, which announced in November they would file plans to build a multi-million dollar Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, detention center just south of Elkhart, across from the county jail on what used to be the county landfill. This got people so riled up, they immediately started hosting sessions like this one.
Bienvenidos a todos de la comunidad de Elkhart County and beyond. I know there's people from Southland here, so thank you for making the hard drive.
Core Civic filed plans for the facility to be reviewed by the county, so the logistics for the facility could be worked out. This is the typical process. It's usually a pretty straightforward one. The planning board hearing was set for earlier this January. After the January meeting, another meeting would be set where county commissioners would get to vote whether or not the detention center got built. That final meeting was set for February. But as my mom likes to say, cría fama y vete a dormir. Core Civic has a spotty record in regards to the way they run their other facilities. That includes prisons and detention centers. They used to be known as Corrections Corporation of America, but had such a bad rap, they had to rebrand. People in Elkhart County immediately got engaged and began working together to bring attention to the havoc a business run by Core Civic would have on the area and on the people in the detention center itself. One of the major groups heading the opposition, the Coalition Against the Elkhart County Immigration Detention Center. They wanted to make sure everyone knew Core Civic's history. One of the people involved with the coalition is Marbella Chavez, who worked with them as a coordinator.
I am first generation Mexican American, and my parents are immigrants, and I saw the process they had to go through to become legalized, and I know that there's a lot of people, including some of my family members right now, who are undocumented, who are struggling a lot with the Trump era, and I know that a lot of people in our community are fearful of the repercussions that having a detention here, center here can bring.
Chavez was born and raised in Chicago, but moved to Elkhart when she was 10. She calls Elkhart home. Chavez says the area is different from what she remembers as a little kid.
It's been progressively getting more people of color that are coming over from, I know, a lot of areas from Chicago and Chicago suburbs that are relocating here because of the jobs.
She says the change no solo se nota en cómo se ve la gente, but in the way they interact.
I see in Goshen especially there's a lot more unity between leaders in the community and other activists trying to help all Elkhart County residents. And so we're really taking advantage of the fact that it's come along so far to, you know, we have more people involved in stopping things like this and just doing social justice work that needs to be done.
Although the coalition was able to get support from some major players, not everyone agreed that the detention center era tan mala idea.
It doesn't even matter if you're here legally, illegally, documented, undocumented. It doesn't matter. That doesn't seem to be the line drawn. what seems to be the line drawn is if you broke the law, number one, well, we got that detention center. And if you broke the law and you're not of an American citizen status, well, then you go to that detention that they want to build here called this ICE detention center. What's wrong with that?
Una de esas personas es Joe Guerrero. Guerrero lives in Goshen and was unemployed at the time of the detention center debacle.
Hey, what race do you think I am? Tell me what you think.
Well, that was going to be my next question because I felt like your last name was extremely...
My last name is a Latin name. It's a Latin name. It means warrior. I'm a guerrero. That's what my father used to tell me when I was a boy. Yeah. Mijo, you're guerrero. You're a warrior. Don't forget that. All right, I'm not forgetting that. I'm still a warrior. I'm still guerrero.
Guerrero says the issue of the detention center was not a race issue and would not have affected as many people as the opposition said it could.
Well, what are they talking about race? How many races are there? Well, how do you know what's a race? You know, do you have an answer? Because I don't think America has an answer for that.
Like many other supporters of the plan, Guerrero says the detention center promised not only more jobs, but a different type of industry to the heavily manufacturing and agricultural Elkhart County.
You don't think it'll have some sort of negative impact on, you know, on the jobs, on the economy as it is now?
Good question, because that's what we should be asking ourselves. Hey, how's that affect the economy? How's that affect jobs? Well, they're jobs. I mean, they're not taking away jobs. They're going to make jobs. Anyone in the opposition to that, I don't understand why.
Well, I don't think it's so much the taking away jobs as it is the idea of scaring people off who are already in those job positions.
Hey, listen, we need workers. We need workers galore. So let's find a way where you can legally come in if you want to offer your expertise and your skills to a growing economy that we want to grow and boom. Bring in those skills. Come on in. There's all kinds of systems. I'm not sure how immigration works, but there's a way to do it.
It's estimated there's about 9,000 jobs in Elkhart County that are currently unfilled. According to Mark Dobson, the president of the Economic Development Corporation of Elkhart County, that number will grow to about 20,000 in the next decade. The number of jobs that are currently unfilled has not gone unnoticed. As the coalition continued to host more events, CoreCivic's hearing with the plan board was pushed back a month. One of the more popular forms of protest was letter writing. People gathered to write letters to their elected officials telling them they opposed the building of the CoreCivic facility. There was one letter, however, that came as a sigh of relief to those opposed to the detention center. In late January, Goshen Mayor Jeremy Stutzman, along with some of the top business leaders in the county, signed a letter opposing the building of the detention center. Stutzman wrote in the letter, quote, "The proposed CoreCivic Detention Center would have many aspects that are not beneficial to our quality of life or place and would detract from the vibrancy of our area." Felipe Merino is an immigration lawyer and president of the Goshen School Board. He was one of the people that signed Stutzman's letter.
Well, I think there's been an overwhelming support for the mayor's position that this is the CoreCivic's project and the proposal is not something that we want in Elkhart County. Frankly, with the job market that we have and the strength of our community the way it is, I don't think we need those kind of jobs.
Just days after Stutzman's letter, CoreCivic representatives called county commissioners and let them know they were pulling plans for the detention center. Latino families are usually said to be close. Family get-togethers are no joke. It's bonds like those and the inclusion and embrace of these cultures that are going to help Elkhart County and other Midwestern counties keep growing and stop detention centers from appearing overnight.
Thank you for listening. Y gracias a Bárbara Anguiano por traernos la historia. Hola, en este episodio queremos hablar de identidad, y para eso we asked Amy to tell her story, a story of lost identity and mixed races. Amy has been identified as white most of her life, and fue solo in the last couple of years she learned that her heritage was, like she calls it, un fraude. Pero dejemos que ella cuente su historia. Soy Paola Marizan y esto es ¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
Telling the stories of Latinos from the homeland to the heartland.
What's going on over here? I hear something.
So I went to see my grandfather in San Diego. I put my baby down for a nap, and the two of us sat under a homemade awning to talk. The breeze was warm, and there was something rustling behind his workbench.
I can't tell if it was down here or up there.
So, I want to be Mexican.
Good. I don't want to.
Is it okay with you if I am, though?
Yes, you bet. I'm not going to hold you for anything. I'm not going to be no Mexican for me.
My grandfather is from Mexicali, but he doesn't have any connection to the place or the culture, and that's on purpose.
I had a bad upbringing. Real bad.
His mother lived in the U.S. She worked at a factory. As a single mom, she sent money home to her family who looked after her two boys. Her family was not kind.
When I was a kid, I peed my bed. And so, see, I got beat for that. I couldn't help it. And then one of my uncles said, I'm going to take care of you. So he made a sign. He said, Mario wet his bed and put it around my neck so I can have it in the school so everybody can see me. And those are things that it's not very pleasant to talk about. This is all I know about the Castellans. I mean, Castellans were terrible people for me. Mm-hmm. To me. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to never go back. There's nothing that I like about Mexico. Nothing.
So eventually, my grandfather immigrated to the U.S. and he joined the Navy. He says it was his salvation. It gave him a new family. The military family, of course, but also like a real new family. There was this Italian kid on base who took my grandfather home with him to Brooklyn on holidays and breaks, and his mother was especially kind to my grandfather.
And I was real happy, and I felt that at this particular time, I was reborn.
He took his rebirth all the way. My grandfather cooks Italian food, he sings Italian songs, and he even grows Italian varieties of tomatoes and herbs. He doesn't exactly go around telling people he's Italian outright. He just doesn't correct them if they make the assumption. And they do.
Can I tell you something?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that we were Italian for a while. Like, I really mm-hmm. believed that. And then when I found out that we weren't, then that for me was, it leaves me in kind of a weird spot. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not Italian, and I don't have that connection to Italian culture the way you do because of your experience with your friend. I don't have any of that, and I don't have any of Mexico. I don't have any of those things, you know?
I want to learn Spanish. I want to learn to cook Mexican food, all of those things. Is that okay with you?
No.
Why not?
I just...
Well, you don't want me to speak Spanish and make tortillas and all this stuff?
Whatever you gotta do, gotta do. No, I'm not going to hold you for that. No. No. If you have to do that, do it. Yeah, but you got your own other background. Don't forget it. Very need to have the white part of it.
So my Mexican grandpa is telling me to not forget my white heritage.
It's very important. Okay. It's very, very, very important. Both things.
Los dos. Juntos.
Huh?
Los dos juntos, sí.
Whatever.
Lo que sea está bien.
The story about his rough childhood is real. Distant cousins have confirmed his claims that he was mistreated by the family. But there's also this other thing. My grandfather fell in love with this country via the military and then became a police officer. Places where whiteness really does mean something special, like he says. Whether he's conscious of it, it arguably behooved his efforts at assimilation to claim a European heritage rather than an indigenous American one.
Okay, well, what else do you think I need to know?
Just be a good person. Just be a good person. Don't be, I'm better than you and I'm better than that. No, you're not better than nobody else.
I'm better than some people.
Yeah. Well, now you're talking about something else.
You mean like culturally?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes.
My daughter's nap is almost over and the rustling sound is back. Yes.
Sure sound like a red to me. I'm going to get my flashlight.
Hang on. I'm not going to stay here for this, am I?
Yeah, stay here.
Terrified.
I don't need his permission to learn about Mexican culture, but this conversation helps me let go of resentment I've carried about his cutting ties with Mexico. It's done. Moving forward, I have to learn about Mexican culture from other places and people. For some, I'm far too removed to claim my Latina heritage. Others accept my ambiguous identity, and some even help me learn things I wish I already knew, like knowing by touch when the masa is ready to press for tortillas. But ultimately, I'm learning that my identity is not determined by them or by my grandfather. It's determined by me.
It's stuck in the... I told you. Oh, it's a lizard.
Mm-hmm.
There you are. We see you. Let's keep it in there till Bobby wakes up so she can see it.
Amy tells us that identity is personal, and in this case, her identity is a combination of facts and her own knowledge of life. For some, she's not close enough to Mexico to claim being Mexican, but in the end, it's not about what others think. Amy continues to search for her identity and learn more about what her background is. ¿Te has sentido como Amy? ¿Buscas tu identidad? Déjanos saber, escríbenos y síguenos escuchando en nuestro website, quepasapodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And don't forget to subscribe. Soy Paola Marizán y esto es ¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
Telling the stories of Latinos from the homeland to the heartland. El mes pasado, U.S. immigration agents raided an Ohio gardening company, arresting 114 suspected undocumented workers. About 200 federal officers blitzed two locations of Corso's Flower and Garden Center. La escena incluyó agents surrounding the perimeter and blocking off nearby streets as helicopters flew overhead. They loaded 114 workers onto buses bound for ICE detention facilities. Y de acuerdo con activistas, dozens of the workers' children were left stranded at daycare centers and with babysitters. The massive raid came exactly 2 months after federal officials arrested 97 immigrants at a meat processing plant in rural Tennessee. Esto es parte de los workplace raids across the country, including a nationwide sweep of 98 7-Eleven stores. Escenas como esta son cada vez más comunes en las noticias. We see the people being surrounded, the agents, the buses, and sometimes even the facilities. But what we don't see is the trauma this causes for not only the companies and the community, but for the families of these individuals. Aquí, la historia de Janeth Vasquez. She grew up in Liberal, Kansas, and her father was deported when she started her first year of college. Ella dice que su vida cambió en todo el sentido de la palabra. She went from being a student and a daughter to being the sole provider of her family. Escucha.
So my dad was deported when I was a freshman in college, and yes, it affects your mental health. It's so hard to talk about it because it makes me very emotional. And it's been quite some time and I still feel like it happened yesterday. Yes, I feel like I suffer from anxiety from it and my sisters as well. I mean, I know we suffered from depression for quite some time and it was a huge obstacle for my family to get over because how do you go from having your father every day and then he's just taken away? And it goes back to, you know, they took him away, but it's not just a big emotional effect. Then you have the stress of the financial part. So my dad was the only one that worked and he was the one that took care of us. So when they sent him back, you know, my mom was frightened. She didn't know. She was still undocumented at the time. So she worked cleaning houses, but she didn't make very much. So at that time, I was the only one that could really provide because I was 18 and my little sisters, they were younger. So on top of trying to get through college, I was basically forced to be an adult. I was basically forced to be like the father figure and grow up. I mean, I have my friends, they're all worried about, you know, going out. They are part of sororities and all these clubs and they're having fun. But me, I'm like struggling with all these emotional issues, financial issues, while at the same time trying to get through college. So yeah, I feel that deportations cause a lot of anxiety. It causes depression, and it's something that it's been quite some time and I still can't get over it. It's still, when I think about it, I just feel so depressed.
Do you talk to your dad?
I do, and it goes back to, so my dad actually suffers from depression, and he had been in the U.S. since he was 12 years old, and they deported him when he was about 45, so most of his life was here. So my dad started drinking a lot, and he just doesn't know how to cope with his depression. So it's hard. And every time we see him, it's so hard because we don't have any family in Mexico. All our family's here. So it's like something you have to live with every day, but what can you do?
En una democracia perfecta, people will migrate legally and do everything by the book. Pero no todo es perfecto. Many immigrants mean many stories. According to Janeth, education is key to helping the country and these individuals understand their roles and their responsibilities better.
Well, the very first thing when a lot of people think about the Midwest, they don't really think that there are Latinos out here. They assume that there's maybe like 1 to 10 Latinos, but in reality, out here in Southwest Kansas, the majority of our population are immigrants. They're mostly Latinos. The majority of them are from Mexico, but we're starting to see a lot more populations immigrate to this area from Central America. So there's still a lot of work to be done. There needs to be a lot more educational tools as far as like helping them integrate into the United States. We have a lot of immigrants who are still new to this country. And so just basic things as like teaching them English, basic things as like different rules here in the United States versus different rules in their home countries. But the biggest thing it always comes down to is the big immigration issue. You know, they're undocumented, and so they face a lot of barriers because of their undocumented status. And so I just think that we need more support in helping these individuals out. But we're limited as to what we can do because of the status as well. I mean, there's only so much that we can do to help them.
Janet's story is not too different from others. Ella también estuvo indocumentada por mucho tiempo. Y sabe lo que se siente vivir con esa preocupación constante.
So I'm kind of involved in a lot of things in this community, but I guess I'll give you a little bit of background about myself. I'm 30 years old. I was born in Mexico. I was born in Juarez. I was brought as a baby when I was 2 years old to Liberal, Kansas. So I actually was undocumented for a very long time until I was able to finally gain legalization. So I faced a lot of the barriers that I see a lot of people are facing now, especially my students. That's why I'm such a huge advocate for DACA students because I've been there before. I've been in their shoes. I know what it's like not even having a driver's license. Something so simple as being able to drive to school could put you in jeopardy to being sent back and your life changing forever. I was the first one in my family to go to college. And while I was in school, I got an internship with Univision Kansas. And then later I was given the opportunity to work for Univision Kansas full time. So I've been to Washington, D.C. this year about four times. So we go and we talk to our senators, you know, just talking to them about the importance of helping DACA students. So then it goes back to not just affecting the DACA students. It goes back to hurting our numbers. So then when our enrollment goes down, then we would probably not be able to have as many employees. You know, we would have to do like cutbacks. And it would hurt us huge financially. I mean, out here, we depend on immigrants because out here, we thrive off like the meat packing plants, the feedlots, agriculture. And a lot of these workers are immigrants. So if we were to have like some big raid or all these anti-immigrant laws, they would leave and that would really just crash our economy.
Janet works at the local community college in Liberal, Kansas as an academic advisor, helping students navigate college and immigration when needed. Ella también ayuda con el Festival del Cinco de Mayo, since she was the first Cinco de Mayo Liberal Kansas Queen in 2002. Janet's mission is to help the youth and the community. She's involved in many nonprofit organizations and communities around the city of Liberal, trying to help those who are lacking the education to better navigate the systems. ¿Tienes una historia parecida? Share it with us y dinos qué piensas. Send us your thoughts through our website, quepasapodcast.com, o escríbenos en social media at quepasamidwest. From PRX and WNIN, this is ¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
¿Qué pasa Midwest?
Telling the stories of Latinos from the homeland to the heartland. I'm your host, Paola Marisan. Cuando era pequeña, a veces tenía que actuar como adulta. Many times, I found myself talking about things that I didn't understand because I was translating for my mom, porque ella no sabía inglés. So there I was, telling her about when the water bill was due and where to pay it, what those state documents meant, what the total at the grocery store was, and one time even about a police report. Como yo, hay muchos. Y nos pasa que children de padres que no hablan inglés have to grow up faster than other kids. But our contributor, Barbara Anguiano, found a school where these two type of kids have a common ground, where some who have grown up too fast can be children and those who don't know Spanish are learning. Listen.
Por afuera, la escuela primaria Parkview in Valparaíso, Indiana, looks like any other school in northern Indiana. Teachers greet kids outside the main doors. Little flashes of color swipe past you as kids scurry to get to their classrooms. There's a smell of plywood because están renovando la escuela. It took me a second to realize what was going on when I walked into the classroom. What I was hearing made sense, and I understood it, but it took me a second to realize it wasn't English.
Mariposa. Mariposa.
We are taking advantage of the window of opportunity, which is the best time to learn a language is birth to 10 years old. And why not? Our kids can do it, and they are.
That's Principal Ann Wodetsky. A couple years ago, Parkview received a state grant to create a pilot bilingual immersion program. Wodetsky says como 23% de los estudiantes son hispanos, y los estudiantes bilingües y de habla hispana were getting left behind.
They would kiss mommy and daddy goodbye in the morning, and that would be English only here, and they were picking up English, but they were losing their own culture.
Dual language schools no son nada nuevo. There's many of them around the country, focusing on many different languages, and they're certainly not new to the state of Indiana. In Fort Wayne, Lindley Elementary ha tenido un programa similar al de Parkview por más de 20 años.
Muy bien, ahí tenemos un sombrero. Repitan, sombrero.
The idea is to teach kids subjects such as math and science en español por mediodía y el resto del día la instrucción es en inglés. Kristen Gwen teaches kindergarten, y los niños están aprendiendo sobre los números.
4 menos 4 es 0, 7 menos 6.
Gwen was an integral part in getting the program to Parkview. She's been teaching kindergarten for 7 years.
The standards that the kids struggle with are the same standards that they struggle with in English. For example, the shapes. They miss hexagon in English when they did it in English, and they still miss it in Spanish. So I don't notice a big discrepancy between what the kids could do in English when I taught in English and what they can do in Spanish. They're learning the same way they normally would have.
Gwen is fluent in Spanish, as are the other two teachers that teach the Spanish part of the day. She says she's noticed changes in the way she teaches when Spanish was added to the mix.
Most of us are much more exhausted than they've ever been because we are not just sitting there. We have to do whatever we have to do, whether it's figuring out a way to show them, like the one we were talking about is like cerca y lejos. So like I'm jumping, showing them how something is far and making a noise or a movement so that it sticks with them.
She says it's importante recordar que los niños están aprendiendo lo mismo que aprenderían si las clases fueran en inglés. El otro beneficio de las clases en español is the confidence students gain when they're all learning the same thing. Escucha.
¿Me puedes decir algo en español?
Mi nombre es Violeta. Mi favorito color es violeta.
Hola, mi nombre es Jana. Mi favorito color es azul y verde.
Good job.
Mi favorito es hablo español.
Más español, por favor.
Pero no todos los estudiantes se sienten cómodos con el español. Brian y Osvaldo son hermanos. They're in different grades. Los dos son bilingües. Y ser bilingüe sometimes means you're the voice for your family. A veces tienes que traducir, and that can be tough. Take the classic cashier scenario. If you've ever translated for your parents, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I'll let the boys explain. Here's Brian.
What about for you? Do you translate for your parents a lot?
Yes.
How do you feel about it?
I kind of hate it.
Why is that?
Because every time when we go to the store, my mom always says how much money did she say that we have to pay.
What do you prefer? Do you prefer Spanish or English?
English.
You like talking in English more?
Yes.
Is it easier for you, or do you think Spanish is easier for you? Do you just shut it off when you come to school? That's a nod.
I think English is more easier to talk.
¿Y Osvaldo?
How do you feel about talking Spanish in school? Learning Spanish in school?
I kind of like it.
He says he kind of likes it.
I can learn new words. I can talk to my parents more because they speak a lot of Spanish. And I'll say that's all.
Brian is not part of the dual language program. It only goes up to the third grade. Osvaldo is. You can hear the difference in their embrace of their native tongue. On the one hand, you have Brian, y no le gusta hablar about one of the things that makes him different. And on the other hand, you have Osvaldo, who embraces it to be part of the group. Another one of Parkview's goals was to increase parent involvement. Eliberto Garcia has a 6-year-old in the program.
Y nos sentimos de esa manera como que partícipes, como que nos cuentan que porque, aunque seamos latinos, no están tomando en cuenta y hacen eventos 100% en español. Entonces, de esa manera, como que sí nos gusta mucho.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3. Rick Madrigal dice que él quiere que el programa sea exitoso porque quiere que sus hijos aprendan de su cultura. He says even with the little Spanish that he knows, le ha beneficiado mucho y no puede imaginar cuánto le pueda beneficiar el programa a su hijo.
I myself can't give him all the Spanish that he really needs to fully get engulfed and learn it and say he knows it, right? So that's probably why I'm a big proponent of this, because it's more of a, hey, we're coming together as a community to say this is okay then and to promote it and to teach it rather than just me as his one father.
He says he's seen his son Miguel's confidence and comfort using the language increase the more Spanish he's exposed to in school. Madrigal says he hopes the program will continue to grow.
¿Puedes repetirlas?
Me, mi, mo, mu.
Wodetsky says part of writing the initial grant that got the program started at Parkview asked them to look ahead at how sustainable the program would be.
We collaborated with some schools in Kentucky and some schools out of state, and they were able to do it, and they kind of shared some of their strategies, and we started implementing them, and I think we're going to be able to do fine.
Because of its success, the program is now funded through the school system, and Wodetsky says she hopes the program will be able to spread to other schools. Y yo también. Spending time at Parkview me hizo pensar que increíble sería tener un programa como este en las escuelas que yo conocí de niña, en lugares como Hammond, como East Chicago, that are just like Parkview.
Like Barbara, many hope programs like this continue to exist and expand, not only for los hijos de inmigrantes y para que no pierdan sus costumbres, but also for the children who will benefit from being bilingual in the future. ¿Y tú? ¿Cuál es tu historia? Share it with us. Contact us on social media, on Twitter, at Que Pasa Midwest, like us on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe.
By 1800, 5 million people lived in Mexico. More than a million Mexicans were mestizos, mixed Spanish and Indian. Another million were Creoles, or Mexican-born Spaniards. And after nearly three centuries of Spanish rule, more than 2 million were pure-blooded Indians.
Hola, soy Paola Marizan. What you just heard was a computer in the middle of El Museo Latino that talks a little bit about the history of the Latinos in the Midwest. I came all the way to Omaha, Nebraska, because I wanted to explore a little bit more about the arte y cultura, the Latino influence in art and culture here in El Medio Oeste. El Museo Latino was the first Latino museum in the Midwest, and I wanted to talk to the founder, Magdalena, about what influence the Latino community has had in the Midwest cuando viene a arte y cultura. There's a common conversation in Latino communities about how art and culture plays a big part in our cultura and is enjoyed and received by non-Latinos with wide arms and big smiles. But when it comes to immigration, the conversation shifts and the tone changes sometimes. So that's something that we will be exploring. And heads up for my only English speakers. In this episodio, we're going to talk mostly Spanish because our guest, Magdalena, just feels more comfortable expressing what she feels in her language. This is Que Pasa Midwest.
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 Telling the stories of Latinos from the homeland to the heartland.
Es Magdalena García. Son pocos los museos en todos Estados Unidos.
Sí, y mire, una de las cosas que yo estaba hablando con una artista en Evansville, que ella es latina, y sus pinturas son muy inspiradas en Frida Kahlo y en México, ¿verdad? Su tierra. Todo es muy vibrante, mucho color.
Aquí también.
Sí. Y ella, ¿verdad? Yo le pregunté, ¿verdad? ¿Cómo ha sido la influencia que usted ha visto desde el momento en que usted empezó aquí, ¿verdad?, en el museo hasta hoy? ¿Cuál es la diferencia que usted ve?
Pues en el 93, cuando se abrió el museo en un espacio más pequeño, teníamos 3,000 pies cuadrados, aquí ya tenemos 18,000.
¿Y cómo fue ese momento que usted dijo, verdad, porque vamos a ser honestos, el Midwest ha sido reconocido por ser un sitio conservador, ¿verdad? Muy conservador. ¿Cómo usted ve que la comunidad recibe la cultura latina?
Pues cuando habla uno de la comunidad, es la comunidad inmediata que estamos aquí dentro del sur de Omaha, que se considera la parte porque en todos los tiempos que ha estado ha llegado los grupos étnicos. Por ejemplo, este edificio antes era de los polacos. Todos los grupos que emigraron, de inmigrantes, inclusive los mexicanos y de otros países. ¿Por qué? Porque los llevaba aquí cerca, estaba, aquí estamos en la 25, casi en la 29, que se ven unos edificios, todo era las empacadoras. Y hay muchas veces que hay ese mal interpretado, esa idea de que tienen de que los inmigrantes que no leemos, que no estamos educados, que no sabemos de nada. Tenemos mucho, estamos ricos de cultura, solo tenemos que abrir nuestra imaginación, nuestro interés. No ha sido fácil y seguimos batallando como todos los non-profits, que tenemos que buscar fondos para mantener el edificio abierto, las puertas abiertas.
Y, ¿verdad?, una de las cosas que discutimos la artista con la que estábamos hablando es que sus obras han empezado a become popular en Evansville, en Indiana, donde ella vive. Entonces, ella me dice, sí, ¿verdad?, tengo mucha gente que está interesada en mi cultura, ¿verdad?, mi pintura, pero no en mí. Me dice, no, ¿verdad?, quieren la cultura, quieren las pinturas, pero no quieren a la gente. Es como que, we want your culture, we want your paintings in my walls, but we don't want immigrants in our country. ¿Qué dice usted acerca de eso?
Sí, yo siempre, no es uno que piense que todo el mundo lo quiere. Está uno en otro país que trata uno con su esfuerzo, con su trabajo, con su educación, hacerse que esta es nuestra casa nueva, ¿no? Nuestra casa. Pero siempre sí yo he sentido que no a todos nos somos muy queridos. Pero ahora en este clima que estamos viviendo es como que todo ha sido, te lo dicen, te lo gritan en tu cara, que nos vayamos, ¿no? Pues yo ya me hice americana y con todos los reglamentos y documentos legales, pero sí, desafortunadamente, estamos viviendo un tiempo muy difícil para todo inmigrante, pero como que los mexicanos o los latinos somos los que estamos al frente de todo, y desafortunadamente ese es lo que sí se ha visto por todos lados.
And Magdalena is right. The sentiment among the Latino community is that we are all in this space where we feel love for our culture and our arts, but we feel rejection. Vibrant Frida Kahlo paintings on the walls, dancing pasito, eating arroz con pollo, or listening to your favorite bilingual podcast are some things that we enjoy, but do we really talk about immigration? Do we really go out and vote when we need to? Do we pay attention to the law and what's going on with DACA, TPS, and other things going on with immigración? ¿Qué realmente estamos haciendo? ¿Solamente celebramos la cultura y el arte o queremos celebrar también la gente? Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this story and you want to add more to our arte y cultura here in the Midwest, please write to us. You can do so on our website, quepasapodcast.com. Muchas gracias por escuchar. This is ¿Qué pasa Midwest?
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 Telling the stories of Latinos from the homeland to the heartland.